LeBron James is no longer the best player in the NBA. NFL training camp started today, and we give our top five sports movies of all time. All that and more on The Reserves.
Hey, guess what?
What?
We're recording episode 5 of The Reserves podcast right now. And we couldn't be any more excited to keep this thing rolling. Carson, if I would have said 5 weeks ago, we're going to make 5 episodes, what would you have said?
You're absolutely insane.
I know. And so we're very appreciative of all the listeners out there who stuck with us. We appreciate the loyalty and hitting that subscribe button. But also, guess what?
What's up?
There are also more people that can hit this, the subscribe button.
Yeah, so subscribe on whatever platform you listen to. Follow us on Twitter, at Reserves Pod. Listen to us every week. Share it. You know, spread the word. You know, we're just two guys who want your attention, and not only your attention, but the attention of your friends and your family, your pets, your dogs, your cats, whatever you want to listen. You know, whoever has ears,
let them hear.
Let them hear it. So, we're recording a little bit later today. This is on a Thursday, because Logan just recently, you just got back from a trip to Milwaukee.
Yeah. So, really enjoyed Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It was about a 9-hour drive there.
Giannis country.
The Giannis country. I almost wore a jersey over my suit, but I didn't think that'd be appreciative.
Oh, I bet they would have loved it.
Probably. But really loved Wisconsin and loved Milwaukee. Got to see the new Bucks Arena. It was very awesome, very cool. Also got taken a game at Miller Park as the Brewers played the Reds. A lot of fun as well. Really, Milwaukee's a chill city, man.
Yeah.
There's not a lot going on. You know, for as big a city as it is, it was really chill and not busy at all.
That's awesome.
And everybody was really nice. So
the worst thing about, like, if you travel is, like, if it's just so cluttered and, you know, people all over the place. That was something I really liked about, you know, when I visited Chicago or when I went to Barcelona for a little bit. It was just, it was a big city, but it felt like you could just hang out and not feel the pressure of, like, a New York or, you know, of a big, you know, hustle and bustle kind of city like that.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Probably ate way too many cheese curds.
Hey, that's fine.
But some of the best cheese curds you'll ever have.
That's good. That's a good thing. So, glad you're back safe and we can finally get down to business and, you know, talk a little bit of NBA today, talk some NFL training camp. We are officially on the clock now for NFL kickoff.
You know what that means?
What is that?
Holdouts.
Holdouts. Yep. So we're going to get to all that. And then, you know, we're talking today and we mentioned some sports movies and we kind of had our own little debate about what we think are the best ones. So later on, we're going to talk about some sports movies. But to start off, LeBron James is not the best player in the league, according to NBA executives. So there was a link I found on Cleveland.com. There's, I think, you know, yearly the NBA does these surveys for NBA executives and you know, who's the best player, you know, what kind of their predictions of who's going to win the finals, all this stuff. ESPN released a poll. And 20 league executives, coaches, and scouts were surveyed. Not one of them listed LeBron James as the best player in the NBA today.
It's unbelievable, Carson.
I was going to ask you, how does that make you feel, first off, as a Lakers fan, and, you know, second off, it's kind of like a lifelong LeBron fan, as I am. It's just, that blows my mind.
Well, what makes you feel is that last year, everybody thought LeBron's going to lead us to the promised land.
Yep.
And then that was a train wreck of a season. So coming this year, probably lower expectations, except with, I don't know if there's lower expectations. It's basically,
I don't know.
Rob Pelinka said title or bust. We're winning a championship or it's a failure this season.
I feel like that's kind of a, like, he has to say that, you know.
Well, you can't go get who you got in free agency and trade for Anthony Davis and not say that.
Yeah.
But the way it makes you feel is, man, what are they watching? I know he had a rough season. I know he had the worst injury of his career.
Rough season by whose standards?
By apparently the mass media, he still averaged 27-7-7.
Right.
Which, I mean, it's crazy numbers.
Yeah, it's all-star numbers.
Just short of a triple-double. And people are going to go, well, his defense was bad. LeBron's defense has never been just outstanding.
Right.
You know, once he turns it on, once he gets to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And
well, yeah.
I don't know. I just think it's a ridiculous thing that we went from LeBron's best player and all of a sudden some, you know, Kawhi and Giannis, I get it, great players, but to not even receive a single vote, I think he's going to come in with a prove them wrong mentality.
Well, so,
and I'm all here for it.
So Kawhi Leonard received 12 of the 20 first place votes. Giannis Antetokounmpo received 6, and James Harden got 2 votes. Now, there was another vote in that poll that asked the, you know, the 20 that were surveyed who they chose to win the NBA championship. And surprisingly, the Los Angeles Lakers received 0 votes again to win that in this new landscape of the era of the duo. We're back to old school basketball, old school team building, and the Los Angeles Clippers led the way with 13 votes in this poll. So, not only are you disrespecting the Lakers with not even giving them a single vote, you give the most votes to their neighbor.
Yeah, the person that's across the hallway in the other locker room.
Down the street.
Not even down the street. I mean, they're in the same stinking building. I don't know, man. Oh, man.
Just as a Lakers fan, I know that has to hurt.
Well, it's kind of like
your pride, maybe.
Even from the days of Lob City, everyone's been all about the Clippers.
Yeah.
Even last year, you know, they went a lot farther than most people thought they would.
Had a great
But still core. Had a really good young core and were a good team. And the Clippers have been better than the Lakers the past couple years. But it's still the Lakers city.
Right.
And it's going to be the Lakers city. Even if they win a championship, the Clippers do this year, which I do not think will happen. I could be a little biased.
Yeah, probably.
But it's still the Lakers city. You don't win 16 championships for nothing and give back, you relinquish the city.
There's a lot of people that would probably disagree with you, including 13 of 20 NBA executives.
What do they know, right?
Yeah, they don't do
it. It's anything. Probably the Wizards front office.
They probably asked all the East teams.
Yeah, for real, right?
Yeah. So, speaking of the East, the Wizards, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on with them. You know, they came out saying that their top priority was to sign Bradley Beal to a long-term contract. You're saying they probably shouldn't do that. They kind of have some front office mix-ups and a little bit of exchanges between their, you know, the general manager, and they're kind of going on a different path now. And you know, you told me prior to recording this that you think the Wizards should trade Bradley Beal.
I really do, man. I think, as of right now, they have to be in complete rebuild mode. And we've seen the price of a superstar is crazy.
In draft picks. 13 and 14-year-olds.
Yeah, but still, it's a crazy haul that you can get right now in the open market.
Yeah.
Especially because if you trade him right now, he has 2 years left on his deal before he becomes a free agent.
Which could be very valuable.
Exactly. You add him to one of these teams that has a duo, and give him a third star, or, you know, wherever he lines up on that, that's automatically maybe the favorite in whatever. Because this league is wide open right now.
Yep.
The most wide open it's been in years, probably this decade. Probably since 2009, after the Celtics won in 2008.
Right.
So I think this trade right now, his value is the highest it's probably going to be. He came off a season averaging 25 points last year and has an all-star and really took the reins of that team and became their most important player once John Wall went down with this major injury.
Yeah. So, like, what do you think is, like, the best fit for him?
Well, with the way the salary cap works, it's going to be, there's some teams, they're going to have to do a lot of maneuvering to make it work.
Yeah.
There's several teams that could, you know, obviously I'd love to see him on the Lakers, but there's no way they have the draft picks to make that work.
Right.
A team that I think would be interesting would be the Pelicans. Mm. That doesn't make them a contender.
No.
But maybe even to a Dallas, give them another shooter, another scorer, someone take the ball out of Doncic's hands.
Pure scorer.
Exactly. Yeah. Could be a lot of fun. And they have the assets in the cap room and flexibility to do that.
Yeah, I think Dallas is probably the best fit for him right now. And also probably the best fit for Washington as well. I agree with you. They have to figure something out. what that kind of does, though, is almost leaves John Wall into like a Russell Westbrook situation where you like trade everybody away and then now he's kind of stuck. So then the next question is, what do you do with John Wall?
Well, John Wall, so he's still young, but he's had a very injury-prone career so far. Yeah. And he's on one of the, like the Chris Paul contract. He's a $40 million player.
Albatross.
And it's just no team really wants to take that on. Now, if he comes back and is healthy and looks like he can play, you may see a team like the Thunder. Or like a team like the Thunder, what they did with Chris Paul acquiring him. And right. He's a lot younger player than Chris Paul. But, you know, the Wizards repeatedly have said, we are not trading Bradley Beal. We're going to make him our guy. And I just think that's a mistake because his value is as high as maybe it ever will be. And right now, if I'm him, I may go to the front office and say, I want out of here. I want to go to contender. He's 26, which is crazy to me because it feels like he's been in the league for a long time.
Right. Now, funny you mention that, you know, because Steve Kerr had something to say about that exact scenario, you know, with Anthony Davis, you know, kind of basically openly criticizing him for the way he handled his contract and, you know, his request for a trade in New Orleans. You know, we're kind of hoping, I know I'm kind of hoping that we don't see that as a trend where people are free agents without really being a free agent. So, you know, what, you know, so the Wizards have a new front office.
Right. So Tommy Shepard was the interim GM. Mm-hmm. And now he just got promoted 2 days ago to their full-time GM role.
Right.
And also some other shakeups in the analytics department. And also bringing in a Brown from the Browns.
Right. A football guy.
Yeah, a football guy who's going to be working more as a outside, like a third-party company that's going to be overseeing some of their operations analytics. And also working with the Washington Mystics, the WNBA team as well. So definitely different shakeup in the front office. And they have a lot of decisions to make about what this team's going to be able to do.
Yeah, I kind of see them, you know, at least for the foreseeable future, being kind of stuck in mediocrity. Kind of like where the Hornets have been in the past several seasons. You know, especially, you know, if they can't figure out what exactly to do with John Wall once he comes back from injury. And is fully healthy. They've just got to, you know, they're stuck right there in the middle, and I don't see them really getting out anytime soon. It's a tough situation that they have. Things just didn't pan out the way they probably had hoped with those two guys, and you know, so I don't see them really doing much in the immediate future.
Right. You know, you talked about earlier that they could offer him the 3-year extension. So that extension is $111 million. And they can give that to him tomorrow on the 26th.
Right.
But next summer, he becomes eligible for the 4-year, $168 million. Or that bumps up if he makes an all-NBA team, which is a very high possibility. He could be 5 years for $254 million, which is crazy.
That is crazy. So,
there's no way he's signing this deal because the potential to make so much money. If he's going to stay with the Wizards... He's signing next summer. Has to.
Right.
So much more money.
I mean, if he doesn't, that creates tension within the team. I mean, everyone knows, you know, nowadays you see players chasing money and all of this, and it's just started to create a cycle of players going to make sure they get paid. And, you know, what I said earlier, players are free agents when they're not free agents, and they're always looking for the next deal. Whether they're on contract or not. So,
but going to even the Steve Kerr thing, we didn't talk a lot about that.
Right.
I like that players are having flexibility to get out if they want to, because these owners, or excuse me, these governors now, they draft them and they don't really have a choice in the matter where they get drafted to. I know maybe there's some under the table things that happen where they scenarios where they have a little power, but once they're drafted, yeah, they signed the rookie max extension. They're there for a long time. And who blames a player if, like in the Anthony Davis situation, where they were not building a consistent winner with him around them, and not making the playoffs consecutively or going far in the playoffs, for one to go to a team that offers them a better chance to not be a Charles Barkley or Patrick Ewing of being on a team that never wins?
Yeah, I agree there. The thing that worries me about it is that it's gonna create more of a top heavy. Now we're on kind of an even playing field because things kind of shook up that way, and I would say we got lucky as a fan base that everything worked out that way, but I could see that becoming or causing a more top heavy NBA, and we could see a lot more teams kind of stuck in mediocrity because nowadays you're either rebuilding or you're contending, and that's it. But then you have those few teams that are just kind of stuck in the middle. And with this new movement of more player flexibility, I could see that becoming a little bit wider, that middle group right there. So, and nobody likes to see that stuff, as a fan. But still kind of staying on the topic of Bradley Beal. He's part of a group of players right now, really a group of superstars in the NBA, who are opting out of playing for Team USA in the upcoming FIBA World Cup. Now, there's a list. There's James Harden, Anthony Davis, CJ McCollum, Damian Lillard, Bradley Beal, Eric Gordon, DeMar DeRozan, and Tobias Harris have all decided to not join Team USA. And the reasons are unknown, but everyone's kind of guessing that they're taking time, first off, not to get hurt in the FIBA World Cup, because the NBA seems so wide open now that, Golden State's no longer a, quote unquote lock for the final in this upcoming season. So they're going to spend time to not get hurt and also to get acclimated to their new teammates. So what do you think about playing for Team USA? It seems to be like a really high honor, to represent your country. And a lot of the guys in that list have done it before and won a lot of games with Team USA. So what do you think about these players, these superstars opting out?
Yeah, and you didn't even mention the likes of LeBron and Curry and, the obvious superstars, which we kind of knew even before this process started of selection, they weren't going to be a part. So these other guys, these probably second tier besides James Harden deciding not to, I understand it. The players they have right now, they're still on the roster: Kemba Walker, Chris Middleton, Kyle Lowry, Andre Drummond, Kyle Kuzma, Harrison Barnes, and other very solid NBA players.
Yeah.
But they're not the superstars that you saw play over the past couple of years. One thing I think could be is that the World Cup final is set September 15th in Beijing. And that's really close to when the start of NBA training camps. And the first preseason game is October 4th. So it's not a lot of time to have any downtime for these players to play. And then also, you mentioned injuries. Look what happened to Paul George in the World Cup in 2014. Mm. So you don't want a situation like that. That was just in a scrimmage game.
I guess it works out for these younger guys that get a chance to play for their country and represent at the highest level. I don't know. I haven't seen any reports on any of these international NBA players. I assume they're going to play for their countries. Maybe not a guy like Giannis Antetokounmpo. Although we haven't heard anything, he might end up playing for Greece. We don't know.
Have all four of the brothers playing.
Maybe. That might be a scary team for the USA. But
one thing, too, to point out is that they don't even have to win the World Cup to qualify for next year's Olympics. All they have to do is be one of the top two finishers in the tournament out of seven teams that are going to represent the Western Hemisphere. They're probably going to qualify unless something
We're the number one
crazy
team,
happens.
Number one team in the world.
Exactly.
So, regardless of who's out there, the roster they have out right now is still, an all-star roster. And we have the best players in the world. And I don't think that's going to be as much of a concern as people may think, but
some of these players could actually hop on, the great players when they want to play in the Olympics.
Yeah.
Just for this World Cup, they're not wanting to show up.
Which I expect some guys to also, once the Olympics come around, mm-hmm. I expect some of these bigger name guys, maybe not like the old heads like LeBron or KD or Curry, but
what they need to do, right?
What's that?
Team USA himself. Carmelo Anthony needs to be added to this roster.
Exactly. I saw that on Twitter. I actually retweeted that. And he went off.
I mean, he's
In that Redeem team, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's what they called him. He won MVP, didn't he?
He was the best player on that team.
Yeah. He may not have won MVP, but he was definitely...
I think he did.
He might have. I think I remember that correctly. So,
when you're a stats guy, look that up.
Yeah, if we had one. So, we're going to stop right there, take a break for a quick minute. When we come back, we're going to dive into some NFL talk about training camp and some projections for this next season. And then we're going to talk about our top five sports movies of all time after the break. Welcome back. The NFL is here. Training camp has started. Teams are starting to report. Players are starting to not report. And that's what's on the table first. There's a slew of players who have chosen to not report to training camp. The biggest one right now being Melvin Gordon. You know, Trent Williams is also on that. Ezekiel Elliott has some question marks. You know, there's some
Michael Thomas.
Michael Thomas just announced today he's holding out. Yannick Ngakoue of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And Jadeveon Clowney is not expected to be at training camp, or at least at the beginning of training camp. So let's start with Melvin Gordon, who might be on the hot seat right now because reports came out that the Chargers are stopping talks with him and they're going to focus on the backs that they have. So maybe they think so high of Austin Ekeler.
Shout out to Ekeler. He really saved my fantasy season last year.
And probably a lot more people's. And as Melvin Gordon probably ruined a lot of people's.
That's very true.
As he always does. Because he has glass bones, doesn't he?
Well, let's not get too far. But.
Yeah, well, something like that. So Melvin Gordon's holding out and he's probably in the worst position. You know, obviously the Chargers aren't in any hurry to sign him to an extension. Ezekiel Elliott is also an interesting one to talk about because he was not on the plane heading to Cowboys training camp today.
But also, let's put it out there that tomorrow is the official day you have to report.
Right.
So other players weren't on the plane in Dallas, like DeMarcus Lawrence, but he showed up later in the evening. As just reported a few minutes ago.
Right. So, Ezekiel Elliott is seeking a contract extension, although he has 2 years left on his deal after the Cowboys picked up their player option for his fifth year. That would be an interesting thing. I don't expect him to continue to hold out for a contract, but because he still has another year, an extra year.
Right.
On his contract, whereas, you know, we see players hold out when they're on their last year of their contract. I definitely wouldn't put it past him because he has been kind of a... You know, like a different guy. He's kind of handled things in a louder way than some players. So
there's a lot of baggage with Ezekiel Elliott.
Oh, yeah. So, and we talked last week about, you know, what the Cowboys are faced with right now with paying Dak Prescott, paying Ezekiel Elliott.
Just paid Lawrence.
And then they have that talented secondary that they're going to have to.
And their linebackers, too.
Yeah. And with a Van Der Esch, at least they have him under contract for, you know, 3 more years, maybe 4 more years.
Pay Smith fairly soon.
Yeah. So the Cowboys right now are probably in the most win now mode. It maybe.
The Saints with Michael Thomas.
Yeah. So that's interesting. You know, Trent Williams, you know, mentioned earlier. He did not report at camp, which was expected, but it wasn't anything too serious. Apparently, Coach Jay Gruden said he was dealing with personal business. So, you know, we'll get updates on that as it happens. Good news. All the first round picks in this latest draft have signed. Quinnen Williams and Nick Bosa both signed their contracts today. And, Quinnen Williams did not attend the start of Jets training camp, but signed his deal shortly after. Adam Gase was not concerned with that. You know, he just said, quote, it's part of the process when asked about Quinnen Williams holding out for his contract. I imagine Quinnen Williams was also setting up or dealing with offset language like Nick Bosa.
Right.
And just trying to guarantee as much money as possible.
But let's get into this holdout thing for a little bit.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you personally think the players have a right with two, like Ezekiel Elliott, do the players have the right to hold out when They have two more years left on their deal?
Well, no. No, I think Ezekiel Elliott's completely in the wrong.
Well, okay. Maybe we should say, I shouldn't use him as an example because we don't know if he's really holding out yet first.
Right. Okay. But I mean, you just in general, yeah, the league, they do get fined if they don't report. But the thing is, you know, they make enough money and the fine is just not heavy enough to turn people away. So like Duke Johnson recently requested a trade from the Browns, but he reported to training camp and they called that situation fluid and there's really no problems. Baker Mayfield even came out and said him and Duke are cool and they're just practicing like they normally would, even though he has requested a trade and doesn't want to be part of the Cleveland team. So I don't think any kind of holdout is warranted. But
I just don't want to see another Le'Veon Bell situation again.
Have somebody sit out for a whole year.
Right.
That's ridiculous.
Like Melvin Gordon, rumors are it could get to that.
Yeah. I mean, and we just, you know, just reading this, Chargers aren't in any hurry.
And why would they be?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if you pay a running back more than, you know, minimum wage, I think you're making a huge mistake.
There are a lot of quality backs in this league right now.
Yeah. And the running back position itself isn't very valuable.
Because a lot of times just having a rotation of backs, quality backs, that can take a lot of carries away from having one single back, puts yourself in a nice high leverage situation.
Yeah. You can use that money somewhere else on a more valuable position like a quarterback or a middle linebacker or a dominant safety or pass rusher. And having a, you know, we're starting to see that with Todd Gurley, where in lieu of his injury, the Rams have moved now to, instead of using him as like the bell cow or the feature back, they're moving to a running back by committee and, you know, in order to take some of the load off of him. So, you know, I've never been a huge advocate of paying running backs big time deals. Now, obviously the Cowboys are in a tough situation, like we've said many times before, because Ezekiel Elliott is such a big personality and he's such a good player and he's kind of been the face of that franchise for, you know, since he's shown up.
Well,
so,
well, there's certain situations where I think you can justify paying a running back a high deal based on if you have a good offensive line. I think that has a lot to do with it.
Which the Cowboys do.
They do. And the Rams are another team that has a good offensive line.
Right.
But some of these other teams, the Chargers actually have a decent offensive line as well. Mm. But that's why they can use a platoon style system of having multiple running backs if they need to do something with Melvin Gordon. But it's these teams like, you know, the Jets, for example. We'll see with Le'Veon Bell paying a back like him so much money when he's getting later in his career. If that comes and backfires on them.
Yeah, and he's as elite as he is, his running style is different than, you know, it's different than any back in the league.
Right.
Very patient. He sometimes he'll stop in the backfield after receiving a handoff. And the Steelers are really good at setting him up with that. But that's hard to learn as an offensive line, how to hold your blocks for maybe a half second longer than you need to, especially in the run game.
Right.
So, I mean, with all these freaks that are coming in on the defensive line, day in, day out, like every week you're facing some new, you know, physical specimen who just looks like an alien out there pass rushing. So, we'll see how that works. That's a good point you bring up with the Jets. But I'm happy to see the rookies get their deals. Obviously, nobody likes when, you know, a rookie, you know, things aren't really working out, you know, and really you got to feel for them. You know, I'm actually enjoying watching them get things figured out early. You know, a guy like Nick Bosa working out offset language that we knew for sure that was the reason. Quinnen Williams, I'm just assuming that's kind of what was going on because, you know, we saw that example of Adrian Peterson not too long ago. And now he's, you know, in so much debt because he trusted the wrong people based off what his attorney was saying.
Right.
So there's a dark side to all this. And I am enjoying seeing these rookies, you know, kind of clean that stuff up on the front end. And you know, it'll only set them up in the future.
I believe once the NFLPA has a new agreement with the NFL, I feel like some of this stuff may be cleared up.
I hope so.
Because I sure hope so, because some of these things holding out with rookies and even just regular players, veteran players, it's kind of getting ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, organizations are trying to save as much money as possible with these rookies.
Because I get it from both sides.
Yeah.
But there has to be some better timetable or a fine that penalizes for holding out, but also something that incentivizes the owners to pay.
Right.
So
maybe
hopefully there's some common ground that they can both come to.
Yeah.
And we can get this thing figured out so we don't have these storylines every training camp.
Yeah, there seems to be, we've come to know there's always at least a handful of players that are holding out for big deals. And typically it's these guys who, played really well towards the end of their rookie contract and they're kind of getting old. And I mean, typically it's running backs.
A lot of times, yeah, you're right.
We're typically seeing running backs. Teams are really quick to pay a quarterback if he's good. We saw that with Kirk Cousins. We saw it with Matt Stafford. We saw that with Russell Wilson. We saw that with all these guys.
Well, because once running backs, mentioned Le'Veon Bell earlier, once they get to that 27, that fifth year mark, it's been shown on stats alone that their numbers really start to climb once they get closer to 30, and they deal with a lot more higher injuries. So, it's hard to blame teams for holding out as well, for not wanting to pay these players.
No, I see it. I understand completely. And again, we understand that players want to get their money. You need to get as many guarantees as you can. I'm a huge advocate for more guarantees in the NFL, like the NBA, who offers so much more guaranteed money.
Or the MLB as well.
Too. Yeah, Major League Baseball does a great job with that too. So moving on from that, just a little bit of predicting, kind of like a way too early prediction, maybe not way too early, but just an early prediction of maybe the top three strongest divisions in the NFL. So there's a lot of good teams. So now we're kind of in this landscape now, the NFL. There's so many good quarterbacks. I'll say so many great quarterbacks. There's quarterback play is at an all-time high right now. Defensive play is at an all-time high. The NFL is smart as ever. There are definitely, there's less, I don't want to say less competition. The competition is higher, but it's much more of an even playing field.
Right.
But with that being said, there are some divisions that are just absolutely stacked. So go ahead and give me one of your top, your strongest division.
Yeah, one of my strongest is the AFC West. You got two powerhouses in the Chiefs and the Chargers.
Right.
The Raiders don't look like they're going to be as strong. We don't know that entirely. And also the Broncos, probably not as strong as they have been in recent years.
Still have a great defense.
Still have a good defense. We'll see about their offense with Joe Flacco coming in, taking the reins over. Or
Drew Lock.
Who's going to be? I believe it'll be Flacco at least early on in the year.
Oh, yeah.
And if we see them start to really decline, it'll be Drew Lock's team to
lead. Super Bowl winner.
That's right. So that's one of my teams that really stands out to me when I'm thinking about these strong divisions. What's one of yours?
So I think the strongest division in the league is definitely the AFC South. You get the Jaguars, you get the Colts, the Titans, and the Texans. Man, you just look across to all those teams. The Colts arguably might have the best roster in NFL right now. One of the best, elite quarterback play across the board. Maybe not. You have an elite quarterback in Andrew Luck. Deshaun Watson and Mariota are right there on the cusp of elite.
And Nick Foles, baby.
And Nick Foles, who has been a proven winner and in big time moments. And, we have four teams who might possibly have all have top eight defenses.
It's very true.
So, the Colts just have recent, defensive rookie of the year, Darius Leonard, who is a superstar young middle linebacker, which is probably, arguably one of the most valuable positions in football. And young safeties, they just paid Pierre Desir, made him the highest paid slot corner in the league for a reason. And, Tennessee just paid Kevin Byard that 5-year $70 million. He's the best safety in the league. And, Houston, that pass rush, that front seven is just filthy. And we know Jacksonville has
great defense as well.
Got the steal of the draft, I think, in Josh Allen. Just reloaded that just disgusting defense that they have out there.
Joins guys like Jalen Ramsey.
Ngakoue, Miles Jack. They still have Calais Campbell. They still have a monstrous front seven and still have veterans on the back end.
And just don't sleep on the offense either with Leonard Fournette, too.
Leonard Fournette. They still got burners like D.D. Westbrook.
Exactly.
They got, I think they still have Marquise Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And they, I mean, that offensive line is really their biggest question mark. But, you know, everywhere else.
If they just give Nick Foles some time.
Yeah.
To throw and Leonard Fournette open some holes for him.
Dude, that division.
It's a tight.
It's tough because you want to see those kind of teams in the playoffs. It's tough that, you know, not all of them can make it because all of those teams, you put them in the playoffs and they can make a run for the Super Bowl.
Right.
So that's why I think they're the, you know, they're one of the top. I think they're the number one division in the league. So
now moving toward the NFC, I really like the North. There are three really high quality teams with the Bears winning the division last year, going to the playoffs. Of course, losing in the brutal loss to Philly in the wild card game. But also, too, with Green Bay, should be a resurgent year for them as they hire a new head coach and probably a comeback season for Aaron Rodgers. And also, Minnesota Vikings, going to have a lot to prove. Kirk Cousins on that major deal. Definitely has a talent on offense, should have the talent on defense to do something. So I think that's a tough division in the NFC.
They definitely, Minnesota definitely has one of the most electric offenses in the league. Maybe not a top tier, but they're up there, you know, with guys like Thielen and Diggs and a Dalvin Cook as your running back, and you know, just you know, we've seen from the past you surround Kirk Cousins with weapons, and he's a good point guard, he's a good game managing quarterback, and
now they've had a year to kind of gel, get some of this chemistry.
You know, we've seen videos and sideline cameras of Thielen and Kirk Cousins getting after it, going at each other, and a little frustration, but you know, hopefully, you know, things take time and people place really high expectations on things early, and it's just not, you know, it's not feasible, you know, for that team to win at that point. But now you're right, they've had a year to kind of get used to each other and know how they work with each other, and that division does have, you know, some promise, especially, you know, if Aaron Rodgers can get back into form. And if Green Bay can, you know, find some new life with their new head coach, definitely look for teams out of that division to do some damage in the playoffs. And not to mention, that Chicago Bears defense.
Filthy.
Is probably, it's the best in the league. You know, with the probably arguably the best front seven in football right now with Khalil Mack, Akeem Hicks, and Roquan Smith. And then you have, guys on the back end, like Eddie Jackson, who's playing lights out, who had more touchdowns than most offensive players.
It's true.
And, you know, they're doing something right over there. And all they really need is Mitchell Trubisky to elevate his game just a little bit. You know, and they're one kick away from playing New Orleans in the next round of the playoffs. And I think they could have beat New Orleans. I think their defense would have given New Orleans fits. And, you know, because Philly just didn't, they had a depleted secondary. And, you know, even Philly came down to a couple plays near the end and lost to New Orleans. So, you know, we could very well be, you know, could have been looking at the Bears in the Super Bowl against New England, which could have been a very different game. You know,
it's true.
So the Bears have a lot to look forward to. Now, I obviously see them taking that division. So kind of going on the flip side of what we've been talking about, what's your weakest division, or maybe like a handful of the weakest divisions in the NFL right now?
I think the obvious answer is the AFC East.
Yeah.
You know, obviously top heavy with New England, always picked to be the favorites to win the division, but why wouldn't they with Buffalo, the Dolphins, and the New York Jets? These are just teams that are rebuilding, have a lot of young players, and have some promise, but probably not until down the road in a couple of years.
So after New England, who's your most interesting team in that division?
That's tough. I would probably say the Jets. Want to see how Darnold grows in that second year. Hopefully he doesn't fall into the sophomore slump. And also I want to see if that offensive line can get better, can really open up some plays for Le'Veon Bell and adapt to his running style as we discussed earlier.
Yeah, I agree. I really like Buffalo though. And Miami with Josh Rosen, you know, the least pressured quarterback in the NFL right now.
According to Carson Coates.
According to the reserves. So, yeah, that division is just so top heavy, man. Like, you have the best dynasty in sports, and then you have three teams who just perennially average.
Yeah, because other than that division, there's not, you know, looking at divisions, there's not another division where I just can call immediately without really think about it.
Well, I mean, there's one that kind of comes to mind, you know, maybe the NFC South. You got New Orleans, Atlanta, Carolina, Tampa Bay. But, I mean, you look at a team like Carolina, you know, they have injuries to their quarterback. They got, you know, injuries all over. And, you know, you lose a guy like Cam Newton, who's the lifeblood of that team. And, you know, they're coming off a 7-9 record from last year. So is Atlanta, who suffered huge decreases in their offensive production. And, you know, now we have Julio Jones saying he's going to have 3,000 receiving yards in this next season. So,
but even Matt Ryan's numbers weren't that bad last year.
Right.
It was just all around him.
Just as a team.
Right.
Just performed poorly. I mean,
and had no time to throw.
Yeah. And then you have the Saints, you know, kind of the same situation as, you know, the AFC East, where it's kind of top heavy. We always expect the Saints to perform and to do well.
But these teams around the Saints are not really rebuilding. They just had to reload and retool.
Yeah.
And hopefully make a run at getting to the playoffs this year.
They kind of just suffered some, you know, they suffered through some adversity in the last season, and, you know, they lost. They lost to it.
Yeah, there's experienced teams that have been to the Super Bowl fairly recently.
Oh, yeah.
There with the Falcons and Panthers. So, a little different situation, but still, I understand. A little top heavy with the Saints. Clearly the favorites, but not like the East, where there's three teams that have not touched the playoffs in several years.
So, the AFC North is also interesting. You know, you have the big story of the season, the Cleveland Browns, who won 7 games last year and are primed. You know, they have all the hype in the world around them. You know, there were videos today of, you know, maybe every single reception that Odell Beckham Jr. had, and he just seemed to make each one look more spectacular than the next.
Building chemistry with Baker. I think that was the headline.
Oh, gosh. So
it's going to be a lot of that this training camp.
I would expect a lot of, you know, loud mouth, and I expect a lot of trash talking. But, you know, I like to buy into the hype for the Browns. And, you know, that division as a whole, I see Pittsburgh, you know, they finished 9-6-1 last year. I see them taking a step back.
I see Baltimore taking a step back as well.
I see Baltimore definitely take. I don't think they get to double-digit wins again. I think Cleveland wins that division. And then Cincinnati is in rebuild mode. They got a new head coach. They got
Dalton or bust, baby.
Yeah, so Andy Dalton, it's time for him to perform. And, you know, obviously they haven't really surrounded him with the best talent. AJ Green is regressing as he gets older, which is sad to see. But, you know, that's just how things work. So, let's go back to the NFC South. So there's a lot of, you know, storylines kind of going into this season. You know, we've already kind of touched on one. You know, the Cleveland Browns, they've got all this hype surrounding them. They've got Baker Mayfield giving his uncut thoughts about Duke Johnson, about players not wanting to be part of the Cleveland Browns. You got the reunion of Jarvis and Odell. You've got all this talent surrounding a confident quarterback and a new head coach and everything. So, but we decided to take a different look at some other teams and find one team each that we think has an interesting storyline to follow for this season. I'm going to let you start first.
So my team that is very interesting, it's probably interesting on a different reason than the Browns, is the Detroit Lions. So we were talking about the NFC divisions, and I think they're an interesting team based on the fact that they were recently projected to have the worst record in football by Nate Davis of the USA Today. He said that they would have the record of 3-13 to be exact, which would be a tie for the worst record in the entire league. I thought it was an interesting article. Also, the guy did say that the Chargers would defeat the Eagles in the Super Bowl. So I think he's way off base, but anyway, he just said that it was difficult to see Matt Patricia improving on a 6-10 record. But I think they're interesting because I think they have a lot of potential on this team with the additions they made in free agency and also through the draft. You know, they went out and signed Trey Flowers, Jesse James, Rashawn Melvin, CJ Anderson, and Andrew Adams. And so they've really beefed up that defense. It should be pretty exciting. They were a decent defense in the league last year. But on offense, Matthew Stafford's got to start throwing the ball downfield.
It's go time for him.
And he's got to prove it. He's right, still in his prime. He's got to come out ready to win.
I'd say he's kind of on the tail end of his prime.
Yeah, but he's still there.
He's there. And I love Matt Stafford. I'm a huge fan of him. So, you know, I think it's a good choice. And you mentioned the defense. Matt Patricia, let's not forget, he was the Patriots defensive coordinator for a while. So, obviously, the scheme is there. Just got to put the players. They went and got Trey Flowers. That's a great pickup because he's a former Patriot, played for Coach Patricia.
Arkansas boy.
Arkansas. So, yeah, I like that. I always support Matt Stafford regardless.
Well, and two, they're in that tough North division.
Yeah, they got to face Chicago twice.
And Green Bay and also Minnesota. So tough games, of course. And I see why you project them to be losing several of those games, but I think 3-13 is pretty ridiculous.
That's pretty harsh.
Considering who they added, and hopefully they can just build on what they had last year. I'm not a big Detroit fan, but I like Matthew Stafford a lot, and I like Coach Patricia.
I do too, yeah. I think they're going to be – I think it's definitely interesting. I think Tampa Bay is probably the most interesting. You look at their draft, and they went very defensive heavy. Which is interesting. They seem to be so confident in their offense. You know, the only offensive player they drafted was Scott Miller, a receiver from Bowling Green, in the sixth round. Which, you know, kind of seems to be like a replacement for Adam Humphries. You know,
right.
Miller is 5'11", 166 pounds. But he ran a high 4.2, low 4.3 in his pro day. So he's a burner. He's a speed guy. Somebody take the top off of defense, hopefully, and maybe a very good special teams guy. So, you know, other than that, they drafted straight defense, trying to beef up, you know, that side of the ball, and that was headlined by Devin White. You know, the fifth overall pick, arguably one of the best linebackers in the draft. They passed up Josh Allen and Ed Oliver to get their linebacker in Devin White, who seemed to be a replacement for Quan Alexander. Mm-hmm. So the defensive side, they really seem to focus on that this offseason. Where I think the interest comes from is the addition of Bruce Arians as the coach. And he's been known as like a quarterback guru. Jameis Winston has not been performing to the level we expected.
Yeah, they're banking a lot on him being able to fix Winston.
Right. So, you know, that's what it's riding on. They have a solid offense. Their offensive line is an issue, but they do have a good running back committee. They have an elite wide receiver, Mike Evans. Mm-hmm. They have O.J. Howard at tight end. They've got a good roster. They've got a good offensive roster. You know, barring injury, they can...
They won't have Jackson on the outside anymore.
No. But they have been adding pieces, and, you know, if Bruce Arians can figure out a way to turn Winston's career around, I could see them pushing for that wild card spot, especially in their division, if Atlanta and Carolina face some of the same issues that they did last year.
Right. So that's all we really had on the NFL news for today with training camps getting started. And now we're kind of moving to a fun segment. That really we got this idea because we were talking about some sports movies that are some of our all-time favorites.
We really had trouble pinpointing. Like, we just started throwing out names.
This was way harder than I thought it would be.
So we've managed to come up with a list of our top five sports movies of all time. And we kind of went in a way where we tried to stay away from the comedies of like Happy Gilmore, The Longest Yard, The Waterboy.
Very Adam Sandler heavy.
Adam
movies.
Sandler heavy. Apparently, he is seriously tapped into the sports movie market. And so we decided to stay away from those because they're just really made it too difficult on our end.
It did. So these are the serious sports movies and the ones that have meant the most to us and what we like the most. So we want to do this 5-1.
Oh, yeah. Start at 5.
Okay. I'll begin. So, number 5 on my list is Moneyball, starring Brad Pitt. Mm-hmm. And I just love that movie. I love baseball. I read the book before I watched the movie. And it was just a really cool take on how the Athletics built their program.
Oh, yeah. And so, number 5 for me was The Blind Side. Obviously, big football guy. So, really...
Sandra.
3 out of 5 of my movies are football movies. So, you know, everyone knows the story of Michael Orr and his recruitment from Tennessee to Ole Miss and, you know, playing in the NFL and his whole story. It's just, that's just a movie I could watch all the time. So, number 5, Blind Side.
Number 4 is The Hoosiers. Great movie.
Classic.
And not sure what else I can say about the Hoosiers.
Just, everybody should know.
You should all watch it. It's on Netflix right now if you've not seen it.
Okay.
So, Hoosiers, great basketball movie. Even though it's set in the 80s, great movie.
Oh, yeah. So, number 4 for me is Remember the Titans. If anybody played football as a kid, you probably watched Remember the Titans. Even if you didn't, your English teacher might have made you watch it for, you know, for other reasons. And Remember the Titans is just... It's the perfect combination of sports and society and just the underlying messages and lessons. It's just a perfect movie about coming together and setting aside differences for the betterment of a team. It's just an incredible movie.
Number 3 on my list is Glory Road, a story about how Texas Western beat Kentucky to win the NCAA tournament, undergoing a lot of odds, bringing on the African-American players. I just love that movie. Because it has a lot of really good basketball scenes in it.
I remember I watched that in junior high in a choir class. We watched that for a week. We didn't have anything going on, so we watched that for a week. And
hey, it's a great movie.
I loved it. Yeah. I went home and watched it immediately whenever we finished it. Like, I had to find it and make sure it was sitting in my room. So, number 3 for me is Rudy. Rudy just has a special place in my heart. It was a movie I watched when I was really young. I just loved the story, you know, the little kid who always wanted to go to Notre Dame and, you know, wasn't very smart, worked his tail off to get into the school and, you know, finally getting to go out and play and not only playing, but recording a sack in his first action of college ball. You know, as a fellow walk-on to Rudy, that deserves to be number 1. But these other two are just too impressive for that. So Rudy is a high number 3 for me.
Number 2. This was sort of tough, but not really. Remember the Titans comes at number 2 for me.
Yeah.
Like Carson had this movie at number 4, but really, this is one of my all-time favorite movies with Denzel.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those, I get chills watching it. I watched it, I think it was last week it was on TV, and I was sitting there getting chill bumps from a movie that I've seen. I mean, probably close to 100 times.
What gives you chill bumps? What
make them remember forever the night they played the Titans.
Oh, yeah.
That's my favorite quote of the whole movie.
So, number 2.
I got chill bumps right then.
Just thinking
this
then,
right there.
So, number 2 for me is Miracle. You know, the story of the, I don't remember what year it was, actually. Do you remember what year it was? It was the 1980 Olympic hockey team. It's full of kids mismatch, you know, punk kids who didn't really care, went on to beat the Soviet team who was a powerhouse. They'd come from basically nothing, come to be in this team of just thrown together hooligans, and they end up, you know, pulling off the greatest upset in sports history. That's just such a, you know, interesting story about Miracle. Leading up to the week when we played Alabama, you know, obviously we didn't win that game, but that was a movie we had playing constantly throughout our facility.
One of the greatest speeches by an actor coach, Kurt Russell.
Oh gosh,
in that movie. I mean, it's just
it was.
I keep getting chill bumps today.
It was great. It was great. So that's actually it won the best sports movie ESPY.
Ooh.
Yeah. So it was released in 2004, and it was. That's easily a number 2. So I put that above Rudy. So anybody who knows me knows how important that is. So that's my number two.
Number one was a no-brainer for me. You're Adrian. We did it.
Oh, no.
So I had to put number one the whole Rocky series, excluding Rocky V.
Okay.
Because growing up in the Johnson household, anytime we saw any Rocky movie, again, excluding number five,
yeah,
on TV, we stopped whatever we were doing and watched it. And it honestly didn't matter what we were doing. It was just a crazy thing. And what would happen if you ever watched the Rocky movies on TV, they would start with like the second one. And then all of a sudden, it'd be like 11 o'clock at night. And I'm sitting there with my parents and we're watching Rocky IV. You know, those are like 3-hour movies. So
it was
intense. But so love the Rocky movies, love Sylvester Stallone. And I also love the fact that they're still making money today. With the Creed movies.
Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah. It's a great series. Oh,
so
many quotes.
So that would play.
I mean, I have my workout music. I have Eye of the Tiger. I have the music that's not even have words to it. Just the Rocky music.
Just the instrumentals.
Instrumentals.
Behind it.
That's so good.
So that's probably why it's your number one. So my number one.
If I can change.
My number one is The Sandlot. I think The Sandlot is the classic American movie. Everything about The Sandlot just exemplifies what a child wants as he's growing up. There's nothing better than having a group of friends go out and play baseball all day long. You know, the 4th of July scene is probably one of my favorite movie scenes of all time. You know, when Benny hits a home run, you know, over the fence into the fireworks.
Benny the Jet.
And then they go to the carnival and just throw up all over the place. It's just everything about that movie is perfect. It's just I could watch that, you know, a million times and still enjoy it the same as I did the first time.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stories to it. It's roughly based on real people. And, you know, there's just so many like subplots within it. I just love, it's just such a feel good movie. So The Sandlot has become my number one.
So I had a couple honorable mentions on mine.
I did too.
Had Miracle coming at number six. Mm-hmm. I know that was number two on Carson's list, but I'm not a huge hockey fan.
I'm not either.
I love that movie. But I've just, compared to the other movies, I've not seen it as many times. And so maybe if I've seen it more, it'd be higher. And then number seven, The Rookie, starring Dennis Quaid.
Mm-hmm.
I love that movie. Because I've actually met the real guy.
Really?
Yeah, it was really cool. Got to hear him speak. And it's just a really cool story about how somebody that was in the minor leagues got out of that to teach and coach. And then ended up trying back out for a major league team and mm-hmm. was in his 40s throwing 95 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah.
So just a really cool inspirational story there as well.
Yeah, so I had a couple as well. It's funny you say you got to meet the guy. Invincible was also on my honorable mention. I'm an Eagles fan, of course. But I got to meet Vince Papale.
That's cool.
At an event where he spoke, and I got to, you know, take a picture and shake his hand and all that. So that's another movie, you know, obviously I can watch over and over. All of these are. This was such a hard list.
It was.
To come up with. But another one that some people may not know is The Pistol. Or is following the story of Pistol Pete Maravich, you know, from a child and his journey into the NBA. And
that's a good movie too.
That's a great movie. All it,
him what shooting I love, out like with the lot in the driveway.
Yeah, what I love about that is it shows all of his little tricks and how he kind of developed his skills in the house. You know, as he's going to bed, he's working on his fingertip control and his follow through, and he's constantly. It shows how constantly, like how obsessed he was with the game. So. Shout out to Pete Maravich, The Pistol, and The Sandlot. So, lasting impressions.
And Adrian.
And Sylvester Stallone, too. So,
just everybody.
Lasting impressions for today. I'll go ahead and start. I'll take mine. So, Tim Duncan was hired as an assistant coach for the San Antonio Spurs. Coach Popovich seem to be very excited about it, as all of us are. What I want to see is I want to see him bring his terrible outfits back to the bench. I want to see him bring his Walmart jeans and his Faded Glory t-shirts to...
Is that AM1?
I want him to bring all of that to the bench, and you know, with all of, or maybe, you know, wear a suit with that 2003 style. You know, that 2003 draft class where they all wore like 3XL, 4XL suits.
He's also got some dreadlocks, or
oh yeah,
there's something bring weird it, going make on it, with
bring your
Duncan.
Best or your worst. You know, drip game you can. Just make it look as bad as possible, because we all know what a great coach he's going to be, all jokes aside, and we all know how wonderful it would be, it's going to be for that organization to have Tim Duncan on the sidelines coaching up with Coach Pop.
So my lasting impression is pretty broad, but it's the MLB trade line will happen on July 31st. And over this past week, we've seen a lot of separation in the National League. The American League is shaping up kind of a little bit like expected. The Yankees and Astros are two of the best teams there. And then the NL is still top heavy with teams like the Dodgers. But we're seeing some shaking and moving in the NL Central, one of the toughest divisions in baseball. I say that because every team in that division has owned the first spot for at least a day. And now the Cardinals and Cubs are tied as we're recording this. But as the trade line's coming up, I think we're going to see a lot of shaking and moving in the National League with trades being made and players being dealt, especially with pitching. As there are a lot of teams, there's seven teams right now that are really fighting for a chance to make the playoffs and get into the postseason. So I think a lot of moving with pitching, maybe adding a big bat, it's going to happen. Probably some big names are going to come off the board as well. So that's my lasting impression for this week.
Sounds good. So that's all we have for you this week. Catch us next week at the same time, hopefully earlier. No random trips to Milwaukee this time. So,
yo, Adrian. So, we did it. Episode 5.
We did it. Episode 5, we're out. Catch us at episode 6 next week on the reserves. We're out.